Greetings once again to you, my fellow man. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney, and it's so good to have you with us for another week. Welcome to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. And I woke up many mornings this past week, thinking that the world had gone completely insane. And, well, you'll see why as we delve into the broadcast. A lot of earth-shattering news happened this week, at least in my economy. And let me just begin, and I think this is appropriate. We're going to start in Lusaka, Zambia, there on the continent of Africa. A monkey urinated on Zambian President Rupia Banda as he spoke to journalists at a news conference this past Wednesday. He is quoted as saying, "Perhaps these are blessings," as the urine fell from the monkey onto his jacket. There was some laughter there amongst the gathered press and dignitaries. Now, we understand that the monkey urination incident with Zambian President Rupia Banda is being investigated as a hate crime against Zambia's latest in a series of black presidents. They've had a number of black presidents there in Zambia since the nation was founded, and their most recent black president was urinated on by a monkey right there in front of the press and everybody. And why do I start there? We're going to move on now to another black president, one Barack Hussein Obama. Dateline Washington, D.C., hours after the House of Representatives passed landmark legislation meant to curb greenhouse gas emissions and create an energy-efficient economy, President Barack Hussein Obama urged senators to show courage and follow suit and pass the bill that will end free enterprise in America. At least end it as you and I know it. I think it will still continue somewhere on the level of Scandinavia, or maybe France. This is terrifying stuff. The cap and trade bill, the new energy bill. It has passed the House, and I'm thankful it passed the House late on a Friday. From what I understand, the Democrat leadership put this 1,200-page bill together and submitted it to the House at 3 a.m. the morning after the day Michael Jackson died. And as you know, there was no other news in the days following Michael Jackson's unfortunate demise. There was no other news being covered. And so no one even read the bill. CNN, MSNBC, Fox News, all of them were on a 24/7 Michael Jackson watch. And by the way, just by way of an update, here in Colorado, we are approaching sundown on the third day. And Michael Jackson has not risen. Just so that everyone at MSNBC and CNN is aware, because they seem to have been keeping some sort of religious vigil for Michael, he has not risen. And I believe the sun is already down over New York, but not out in California, so I suppose that the folks out at CNN will keep up the vigil. And I guess we'll see what happens. We'll keep an open mind. I'm not one to make predictions or claim myself to be a prophet, but I predict that he will not rise, despite the vigil. But let's get back to the much more important news of Barry Ho and his efforts to basically destroy the free market in America, to destroy freedom in America. And what does Barry have to say to the Senate? Now, this bill passed the House, which is relatively meaningless. It's not binding yet, but it's made it over one major hurdle in the dark of night and in the din of other news. And so now it goes off to the Senate, and it appears that Barry Ho has taken center stage And he's going to make this bill his baby. This is going to be his goal to make sure this pass, to make sure this passes. And I've got a quote from Barry Ho. Now, as you know, Barry Ho is a tough impression to do, especially for your average white guy from Buffalo. It's really tough. But Barry had some interesting things to say to the Senate as they contemplate the bill to destroy America, also known as cap and trade, or this most recent energy bill. Barry told the Senate, he said, my call to every senator, as well as to every American, is this. We cannot be afraid of the future, and we must not be prisoners of the past. You remember the past, when we had a free market system. Don't believe the misinformation out there that suggests there is somehow a contradiction between investing in clean energy and economic growth. Obama said the bill would create jobs, make renewable energy profitable, and decrease America's dependence on foreign oil, and perhaps even raise Michael Jackson from the dead. He says, quote, it will spur the development of low-carbon sources of energy. Everything from wind, solar, and geothermal. All these power sources, including safer nuclear energy and cleaner coal. Now, the vote there in the House of Representatives marked the first time, according to this Associated Press story, either House of Congress has passed legislation to curb global warming gases, commonly known as CO2. Those are now deemed global warming gases by the Associated Press. You can take that for what it's worth. The legislation, totaling about 1,200 pages, would require the United States to reduce carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions by 17% from 2005 levels by 2020. Did you catch that? Cut greenhouse gas emissions by 17% over the next 15 years and by 83% by mid-century. So by mid-century, Barry Ho would have us all plowing the fields with oxen and cracking the whip on our horse as it pulls our buggy into town for supplies. So basically, the Congress is on the verge of passing a bill to take us back to the 19th century, except for all the queers. And they're going to keep the queers, but everything else is going to go back as if it were 1874. Senator Harry Reid, a Democrat from Nevada, he said, this bill is not perfect, but it is a good product for the Senate. Working with the president and his team, I am hopeful that the Senate will be able to debate and pass bipartisan and comprehensive clean energy and climate legislation this fall. So Harry Reid's on board. Now, they need 60 votes, and there's a good chance that the bill, as it's currently written, and nobody really knows how it's currently written because it was 3 o'clock in the morning, 1,200 pages, and everyone was sitting up watching the Michael Jackson news, waiting for his resurrection. But there's a good chance it won't pass as it's written. But the sad news is there is a real chance that something very much like it will pass here in Barry Ho's first 4-year term as President of the United States. Now, cap and trade and a number of other issues associated with this energy bill, it's my contention that they will kill children. Yeah, this bill will kill children. And it will probably kill, well, it has the potential to kill millions of children, tens of millions of children. Because I truly believe that if the economy of the United States is shackled by socialism and destroyed by this religion of global warming, that the entire economy of the world will collapse. And in the United States, here in America, we're fairly comfortable. When our economy collapses, we don't necessarily find ourselves destitute in the street, picking mosquitoes off each other and eating bugs. But there are a number of third world countries in which exactly that will happen. If our economy collapses, their economy collapses, and when their economy collapses, their children die by the millions. So, cap and trade, green energy, the green religion, it could potentially kill more children worldwide than even the religion of abortion that's been practiced over the last 50 or so years on the global stage. It could kill more children than abortion. So is it worse? Is it more important that we fight cap and trade and clean energy and the greenies than the abortion religion? And I know it's important that we fight it. I don't know how it stacks up. The one thing about cap and trade and the greenies and their proposals to limit CO2 emissions is that they may kill children, but they don't make one or more of the parents or family members of that child murderers. Only the green worshippers who pass and enforce this type of legislation will be held accountable on Judgment Day as murderers. And so I suppose in that respect, it's not as bad as abortion and fighting that religion. But it is important that we fight it. And I got to be honest with you. I'm terrified. I'm terrified at the proposition that these, whoever it was that elected Barry Ho and the Democrats, whoever that was, it was no one in my circle of friends, but someone elected this guy, and by golly, he seems hell-bent on destroying everything that makes our country worth living in. And I'm frankly scared about it. And I want you to be scared with me. Be scared. Be very, very scared. Speaking of something very, very scary, I've got a story here on MO. That's Barry's MO, Michelle Obama. And the story relates to how Michelle Obama doesn't want to be known as simply a fashion plate. She wants to be known as a woman of substance. And she can always be certain that here at the Weekly Worldview, she will never be known as a fashion plate. I think we've made that completely clear. And we do recognize her as a woman of some substance. She says in the article, and I didn't write down where I got this article. I believe it was from Vanity Fair magazine. I could be wrong. She, M.O., Michelle Obama, M.O. is a woman of substance with a background in law, public policy, and management who has found herself relegated to the role of model-in-chief. Well, earlier this month, she changed her chief of staff, and now she's changing her role. Interesting. That's a little bit scary. All we wanted her to do was change her clothes or, you know, change her designer or just shop at Target like a normal person. You know, just so you don't look like a fashion freak. That's all we wanted. But no, not unlike Hillary Rodham Clinton, it appears that M.O., wants to have some input on Barry Ho's legislative and governance strategy, so to speak. Now, M.O. is hiring a full-time speechwriter and has instructed her staff to think strategically so that every event has a purpose and a message. She doesn't want to simply go to events and hug struggling military families. She said she wants to show progress. Communications chief, Camille Johnson, is quoted in the article. She says, it's about things that are coming up that we want to be a part of. Child nutrition, the Child Nutrition Reauthorization Act, prevention and wellness for health care reform. Oh, there it is, health care reform. That's the next one. So they've begun their assault on America, their assault in earnest, with the cap-and-trade energy bill. And they do plan to move right on to health care reform. And apparently, Michelle Obama is going to remove the curtain-like drapery that she calls dresses and clothing, and she's going to participate, not unlike one Hillary Rodham Clinton so many years ago. We all remember that. Those almost seem like good times now. That's how bad it's gotten. M.O. will soon announce the creation of an advisory board to help military families. Oh, okay, because you saw earlier, she doesn't just want to be hugging military, you know. She wants to set up an advisory board so that she can get out of that. She doesn't want to be involved with hugging the military families. I don't know that we have her on tape or on record anywhere loathing the military. But I don't doubt that she does. Now let's move on in through the politics file. Dateline Detroit City Council member Monica Conyers, the wife of Democratic Congressman John Conyers, pleaded guilty Friday to accepting cash bribes in exchange for supporting a sludge contract with a Houston company. That's right, it was a sludge contract. Now, I don't know why. I don't know what a sludge contract is, to be honest with you, but I'm sure there's lots of sludge in Detroit, and that removing it and depositing it in an appropriate place is probably big business. Ms. Conyers, according to the Associated Press, a political unknown who won her council seat in 2005 largely on her husband's name recognition, admitted in federal court last week to a single count of conspiracy to commit bribery. She faces up to 5 years in prison and a $250 fine when she's sentenced sometime in the not-too-distant future. Now, she's according to the Associated Press article, she's a fiery 44-year-old woman. And her husband, Representative John Conyers, who's an 80-year-old chairman, leftist chairman, by the way, of the House Judiciary Committee, who allegedly knew nothing of the bribery. Wait a minute, he's 80 and she's 44? Huh. That's an interesting fact. I wish I had time to research into their relationship, but we'll just have to move on. He's declined to answer any questions regarding the fact that his wife is a thief, probably on the grounds that he doesn't want to incriminate himself. His office released a statement that said, among other things, with hope and prayer, we'll make it through this as a family. Isn't it lovely how the liberal politicians love to tell us how they pray when they've been caught stealing or killing or doing any number of other nefarious, deleterious activities? They always tell us how they're praying. I remember after 9/11 watching the House and Senate, all those members stand up on the steps singing God Bless America, saying prayers. Made me want to puke. So now Conyers' wife gets busted with her hand in the till, and they say they're going to pray a lot about it. Yeah. A U.S. attorney said Monica Conyers admitted to a pattern of conduct of accepting bribes, but the plea agreement does not specify how much money involved. How much money was involved? Well, my guess is it's probably not as much money as Conyers had to pay this lady to marry him. Speaking of Democratic politicians, do I want to speak about them anymore? No, I don't. I was watching, my wife and I watched a really cool TV special on Discovery Channel or something like that the other night about the Somali pirates and how they attacked the Maersk, Alabama. It's amazing how technology allows us now to document these significant events so quickly after they've come to a conclusion. They interviewed a number of the brave men who were on that ship, including the captain, who put his life at risk. Just an amazing documentary about what happened to the Maersk. And, they documented on that documentary how many nations over the past few years have actually paid off these Somali pirates rather than confronting them and trying to put them out of business. And I'm pretty sure that I've determined why it is that Barack Hussein Obama, lover of peace, chose to allow the Navy SEALs to go ahead and shoot those pirates. I think I know why. Based on my in-depth research, I think that Barack Obama took a look at the budget numbers and all the plans he has with cap and trade, with the banking bailout and the housing bailout, the auto bailout, healthcare reform, and he just said, look, we don't have the money. We're going to have to fight. That's all there is to it. And so maybe based on financial desperation, Barry Ho did the right thing. And amazing shot by those Navy SEALs, I'll tell you what. That's some good shooting. Their boat was bobbing up and down, and the boat that the pirates were on was bobbing up and down. And you had three SEALs who must be like telepathically communicating with each other, cranking off what sounded like one shot, but it was three, and they took the pirates out. So, you know, we just didn't have the dough. We couldn't come up with the ransom, so we had to do the right thing. All right, now, let's move into the... Now, this story might have made it into the political file, the politics file, but maybe the culture file. You tell me. The dateline is San Francisco, California, from the Associated Press. Lawmakers in San Francisco agreed unanimously Tuesday to snuff out new shops that sell pot-smoking paraphernalia in the heart of San Francisco's one-time hippie district. The Board of Supervisors there in San Francisco approved a 3-year moratorium on new businesses in the Hate that sell smoking equipment. The Hate. And that's spelled H-A-I-G-H-T. And I always found that ironic that the center of the hippie love movement is called the Hate. It's the Hate in San Francisco. And if you've ever been there, I can assure you that the homeless people, they pretty much hate everybody around there. And they'll spit on you, and not unlike the monkey out in Zambia, if given half a chance, they'll urinate on you. So it's not really all about love in the Hate. Not at all. And this story tells us it's not only is it all not all about love, it may be all about money there in the Hate. At least a dozen businesses there in the Hate sell dope smoking paraphernalia. It's a popular destination, as you know, Hate Street, for tourists nostalgic for the old hippie, the whole summer of love scene and free love and all that. You know, it was pretty crazy, but it was before the face piercing and the tattoos really got big. I mean, they tie-dyed their shirts and all that, and they worked themselves into a stupor, and they did things to embarrass their parents and their country. Anyway, there's a lot of people, apparently, tourists, who are just long for that summer of love experience. And they're not going to be able to find any new shops selling that dope-smoking paraphernalia that's so popular among that crowd. The ban, voted in by the Board of Supervisors, does not affect existing head shops. That's what they're called, head shops. Supervisor Ross Marcarini, student council member Ross, we'll call him. Student council member Ross said the shops, the head shops, have a place in the district, but we're crowding out other businesses that serve the needs of neighborhood residents. It's like, what are you telling me, dude, that you need more than just love and a cool buzz, man? That's why I came to the Hate, dude. What do you mean, other needs, man? No, we had any other needs. Student council member Ross, by the way, is a Green Party member. And that's green as in, let's destroy Western civilization and the free market system, not green as in marijuana that they sell at other shops there, medical marijuana, I should say. We want to make that clear, that this is marijuana sold strictly for medical purposes. Yeah, a lot of people being diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder after your average day at the office out there in San Francisco, so they stumble down into the Hate. And they pick up their medical marijuana, but what are they to do now for their dope-smoking paraphernalia? Now that head shops are being limited in the Hate, it's really a tragedy. Owners of existing shops have been supportive of the measure. Aha! Aha! Now we see that what we see here is that, even stone fag hippie greenies out in San Francisco who are running a head shop and are barely conscious, even they understand a little bit about business, in that you can't have a head shop on every corner and expect to make a decent living in this town. Anyway, Mayor Gavin Newsom has said he will consider signing the bill or possibly just rolling a giant communal doobie for the whole council before they all head out to the bathhouse. He'll either sign it or he'll do the other. Anyway, Gavin Newsom, San Francisco. I'll tell you what, it's a beautiful city that's been completely ravaged by uncontrolled liberalism. uncontrolled. Anyway, it'll probably fall off into the sea in the not too distant future, and there will be many a pastor who will stand up in the pulpit on that Sunday morning after San Francisco collapses into the ocean, and they'll claim it was a punishment from God. And in a sense, they'll be correct, but only in a sense. All right, now let's move on. Into the international file, this is probably, will be the biggest story of the week. Dateline, Tegucigalpa, Honduras. President Jose Manuel Zelaya, well-known friend of Fidel Castro and Hugo Chavez, was removed from his residence last Sunday morning by military forces who transported him to Costa Rica. He's reported to have said, "Only the people can take away or give me power." That's what he said as the military fellows deposited him on the curb there in Costa Rica. Yeah, that was news to the military guys who were escorting him out of the country, that only the people could take away or give him power. Anyway, he's been removed. He's a leftist socialist who was in a bit of a controversy over a referendum that he was going to force upon the people. And the military said, "We really don't want you to do that." And he said, "Well, I'm going to do it anyway, and I'm going to fire your boss." And at which point, they stuck a gun in his mouth, and they said, "We beg to differ." And they carted him off to Costa Rica, where he can make YouTube videos and send them to Fidel Castro or something like that. Anyway, Secretary of State Hillary Rodham Clinton, what did I say? That's Hillary Rodham Clinton, Secretary of State. See, just saying Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, it throws me into a state of near dementia. I can't take it. Anyway, she has spoken up on the crisis. She said that Sunday's actions in Honduras violate the precepts of the Inter-American Democratic Charter and thus should be condemned by all. Yeah. Now, she didn't say that this is wrong and this is evil and this is bad. She said that this violates the precepts of the Inter-American Democratic Charter, which sent every reporter reporting on the story. The next question was, what is the Inter-American document on the Democratic Charter of Inter-American Democratic Democracy? What is that? Anyway. So what's happened here in Honduras is instructive to our friends over in Iran. It's unfortunate that the protesters in Iran, they simply have no military help. They don't have anyone to stick a gun in Ahmadinejad's mouth or Khamenei. They don't have anyone to, rifle butt him in the forehead and tell him that, we'd like to request a policy review. So Iran, not unlike China after Tiananmen Square back in the 90s, Iran will not only crush this uprising, not only will they crush it and kill its leaders and imprison them and torture them, but it will continue on the world stage, and Ahmadinejad will continue to be called president by the likes of the Associated Press, CNN, ABC, NBC, CBS, Reuters. Oh, they'll call him President Ahmadinejad, just like what happened with China, because no one on the ground there had any guns. All right, now, into the international file. Deeper into the international file. Dateline Moscow. That's in Russia. Russian communists have put up giant billboards of Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin in a southern city there in Russia, promoting his tough methods as the best remedy for the world economic crisis. Now, Reuters tells us, they remind us, Stalin killed millions of people during his 30-year rule until his death in 1953, but many in recession-hit Russia have grown nostalgic for his strong leadership, and he was voted the third most popular historical figure in a nationwide poll right there in Russia in 2009, if you can believe that. We're talking Joseph Stalin here, ladies and gentlemen. Local communists apparently paid an advertising agency about $2,500 to plaster Stalin's image for 1 month on 10 huge billboards around the city of Voronezh. And that's a city with a population of about 1 million people. And it's just a little scary, ladies and gentlemen, that over there in Russia, we've got an economic downturn And I'm sure it's worse there than it is here, as I alluded earlier. You know, when our economy drops and the Western economies stumble, the world economies become critical and people die. But it's really scary that the Russians are turning to Stalin. And even scarier that the Americans are turning to Barry Hope. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. And we've got one more from the International File before we close the International File. And this is just a sad commentary, but I feel it has to be made. Dateline Berlin, and that is in Germany. For all of you public school teachers out there, Dateline Berlin from the Reuters Wire. A Polish couple living in Germany fell out after tying the knot and decided to end their marriage the same day. Yeah. Police in the northern city of Hanover say that the groom said he never wanted to see the bride again and wanted an immediate annulment. And she said the same thing. Right after the civil ceremony, the 50-year-old man began arguing with his brand new bride and then inexplicably tried to cut her hair with a kitchen knife. That's according to police. They say he was going to cut the hair there. Now, the 34-year-old woman, she called the police. She didn't appreciate the offer of a haircut with a kitchen knife. And the police came along and they issued the man a restraining order, which he readily accepted. They said, "We don't want you within 15 feet of her." He said, "Could you make it 30? I can't stand this woman." Anyway, they tried to smooth things out later in the day through the evening by telephone, but that just ended in more shouting. More argument. Before the man went, he went to spend his wedding night in a local shelter for homeless people. Now, why am I telling this story? Well, to be honest with you, I'm really not certain. But what this screams out to me from the printed page is I think I know why the homosexuals are making such advancements in their efforts to be recognized as being able to marry, their efforts toward what they call gay marriage. And I think the problem is that the heterosexuals have done such a horrible job with marriage over the last 40 or 50 years that it's the heterosexual community that has devalued marriage to the point where we can even let the queers do it. Come on, you know what? You know, why not, for crying out loud? It's all a big joke, apparently. It sure seems that way when we read some of these stories. So, note to the heterosexual community, please stop shooting yourself in the foot and embarrassing us all on marriage. How about taking it seriously? Have some kids, honor God, and all of that. And the story is much sadder than I would have thought. Putting me in a bit of a melancholy mood. But not as much as this. This hit pretty hard. Dateline Tampa, Florida, from the Associated Press, from the Religion File. Billy Mays, the burly, bearded television pitchman whose boisterous hawking of products such as Orange Glow and OxyClean made him a popular culture icon, has died. He was but 50 years old. He was found unresponsive in his Tampa home, and a fire rescue crew pronounced him dead at 7:45 in the morning. It's not immediately clear how he died. But one thing that is clear is that right now, let's see, that was 7:45 a.m. this morning. As of right now, I'm not sure exactly what particular situation Billy Mays finds himself in, but I can assure you that he exists right now in another dimension, in a spiritual dimension, in which we will all exist at some point in the not too distant future. Billy Mays is experiencing Judgment Day, quite possibly. And there's only one thing that mattered to Billy Mays at around 7 o'clock this morning. It OxyClean didn't matter, and the Ped Egg didn't matter, and the ratings and the numbers from his latest focus group didn't matter, and the number of dollars generated by his most recent advertising campaign didn't matter, although all of those were extremely important to him last night. And there's nothing wrong with those being important. They are important. They were important. Man's got a family to feed. He had a wife, some kids. I think he had an ex-wife as well. So all those things were important. But this morning, when Billy Mays woke up, in the spiritual dimension that we will all experience, when he woke up, there was only one thing that really mattered. And that was, what say you of Jesus Christ, Mr. Mays? That's the only thing that mattered to Billy Mays. There were no other issues. Everything out, the decks were cleared of all other issues. He had no distractions. There was only one question on the table. Mr. Mays, what say you of Jesus Christ and his offer of salvation from eternal damnation? What decision did you make, Mr. Mays? And that brings us to our Bible verse of the week. And so we will give the appropriate warning. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would not tolerate anyone to ever quote a Bible verse in public, so this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. We're going to go to Psalm, and we're going to go to Psalm 90. We're going to start in verse 7. For we have been consumed by your anger and your wrath, and by your wrath we are terrified, Lord. You have set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your countenance. For all our days have passed away in your wrath. We finish our years like a sigh. The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength they are 80 years, yet their boast is only labor and sorrow. For it is soon cut off, and we fly away. For who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, Lord, so is your wrath. So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Psalm 97. Psalm 90, verse 7. Something to consider before you end up like Billy Mays, facing Judgment Day. And it's going to happen, ladies and gentlemen. For each and every one of us, you and I the same, and everything we did in private will be shouted from the rooftops. I'm not looking forward to a lot of that. I mean, there are parts of it I'm looking forward to, but overall, I would say Judgment Day, no, I'm not looking forward to that day. Even though I have offered I have accepted the offer of salvation from Jesus Christ because he is merciful, and because even a low-down, dirty, scumbag, lying, sinning piece of garbage like myself, at least in my former state before I repented and came to love the Lord and to realize who he is, and what he's really all about. And it's not that hard to understand, really. Not that hard to understand. Even though I've accepted that, it seems apparent to me from Scripture that Judgment Day is not going to be fun, even for those of us who are going to be saved. The word saved even implies, you know, that you were almost in the fire and you just barely got yanked out and you got saved. And it's going to be an unpleasant day. I mean, that the idea of the things that we did and said in private being shouted from the rooftops makes me fairly uncomfortable, as it should you. I mean, think about that. Talk about a day when you're going to need a savior, when you're going to need an advocate, when every low-down, dirty, rotten thing you ever did can be made public in front of everyone, including the creator of the universe and the ultimate judge of the destiny of your eternal soul. On that day, you will need an advocate. And Pitchman Billy Mays, I hope he's got one. I like the guy. I mean, I'm a salesman myself. Billy's style was a little different than mine, but not too much. And I just hope Billy had a relationship with the Lord. I hope Billy had heard about the offer of salvation, taken it seriously, and taken advantage of it. Because I can assure you that that's the only thing that matters to Billy Mays today. All right. Now let's continue with the broadcast here on the terrestrial plane, into the religion file. Dateline Bridgeport, Connecticut. A Connecticut church has outraged gay rights advocates by posting a video of members performing an apparent exorcism of a teen's homosexual demons. Yeah, the 20-minute video was posted on YouTube, and then it was subsequently taken down. Gay youth advocate Robin McHalen says the video appears to show abuse. She says she plans to report it to the Connecticut Department of Children and Families. The boy says he's 16. The Reverend Patricia McKinney of Manifested Glory Ministries there in Bridgeport, Connecticut, she says the boy is 18 and he came to the church on his own seeking help. She denies the church is prejudiced and says it took care of the youth. Well, she should be able to admit, number one, that there aren't any men in her church that are worth their salt because they've got a female pastor, which is, it's a shame. It's just sad when your congregation can't find one solid man among you to lead the church and you have to bring in a woman. But I'm sure these are like snake handler types. I don't know. I mean, when you're casting demons out of homosexuals, you're pretty much outside of the mainstream of Christianity, at least as much as I understand it. But she denies that the church is prejudiced. She should at least be able to admit that they're prejudiced against homosexual demons, if not homosexuals themselves. I mean, if she's not prejudiced, why not let the homosexual demon stay in the homosexual? You're not prejudiced, are you? Well, apparently she is prejudiced. And she should be proud to be prejudiced against homosexuals. Now, if she's prejudiced against homosexual demons, then she's just flat out confused. But that's a whole different subject that we can tackle if I ever get a chance to speak with her directly. But anyway, wouldn't demons, right? Wouldn't that be so convenient if everything that you and I did that fell short of the glory of God or dishonored God or hurt ourselves or our family members or hurt God, if all those things we did could be attributed to demons? I mean, then Judgment Day wouldn't be too bad. You get up there and you're like, hey, it was a demon. And the Lord would be, I don't know, I guess he'd be casting a lot of demons into hell. And once he got them all out of us, I suppose we'd be in serviceable condition and he could let us into heaven. But I don't think that the scripture indicates that that is the fact, that that's the state of affairs. I'll tell you, bad religion, it's not only embarrassing, but it's dangerous because, I mean, if you start teaching people that demons are responsible for their sins, you know, you're going to plant the idea in their mind that they've been absolved of a certain measure of responsibility for their sins. And we need to, at some point, each one of us in our lives, we need to come to that point where we have the crushing realization that we are overwhelmingly responsible for all of our sins and that there's just no way out. And I had that experience. And when you look upon the weight and the severity of the sins that you've committed, it will literally break your heart when you actually consider how responsible you are, how wicked you have become. And to deny people the opportunity to go through that by somehow asserting that there's been some demonic activity that has attributed to their loss of control over their ability to avoid gay bars or whatever sin you're into, you know. I mean, you just can't plant that idea in people's minds. You're going counter to the gospel of Jesus Christ itself, because the gospel requires first the recognition that there is a God and that God has a standard that you violated. You have to realize that first. In old-fashioned terms, we like to say that you admit that you're a sinner. And I know that sounds a little old-fashioned for some folks, but that's what it's about. You realize you're a sinner, and it crushes you. It breaks your heart. And that's when we can introduce you to Jesus Christ, the advocate who can forgive all of your sin if you are repentant, if you will admit that you were wrong and that you hurt him and that you were deceitful and wicked, as the Bible tells us that all men are. But these snake handler types who do these exorcisms, it's just embarrassing, number one, because they're associated with Christianity in general. But it's dangerous. It's dangerous, for crying out loud. I mean, here's an 18-year-old kid who now thinks that they've cast the demon of homosexuality out of him. And I suppose the next time he ends up in a situation where he has a temptation, I mean, who knows what this kid's going to go through the next time he falls. You know, the demon's gone. Now is it me? Or maybe I've got another demon. I mean, it's just a disaster what the Reverend Patricia has set this kid up for. And, well, it's sad. It's embarrassing. It's the state of religion. And unfortunately, it's the state of Christianity among so many superstitious believers. I mean, you know, all pagans are superstitious, but Christians seem to be giving them a pretty good run for their money as far as superstition goes. And I would implore all of you, just read the scriptures. Read it with an open mind about yourself. Don't give yourself too much credit, and don't be looking for no demons. All right, it's the Weekly Worldview, folks. We are cruising into the final segment here, and we're gonna definitely stop at an hour tonight because we plan to finish the show before sundown, and we want to keep an eye on that Michael Jackson vigil just in case I was wrong about my prediction that Michael Jackson will not rise on the third day. So we'll have to end the show right on schedule. We're going to move quickly through the Domestic Tranquility file, a thick file this week as it is every week. Hold on to your hats. Dateline Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Former student and football player is accused of killing a football coach, Ed Thomas, one of the most famous football coaches in the country, apparently, walked into the school's weight room early in the morning, and Mark Becker, 24-year-old former student, shot football coach Ed Thomas several times, including in the head at point-blank range. Dateline Chicago, Illinois, the recent uptick in violence is literally draining the blood supply. O-negative blood is in short supply in the city of Chicago. DeLondon Smith was stabbed through the heart last Friday. He says a blood transfusion saved him. Dr. Andrew Dennis, who is a trauma surgeon out at Stroger Hospital. Andrew says that the reason for the shortage is the high number of victims of shootings and other violent crimes who come to the hospital for life-saving treatment. This trauma surgeon claims that we probably see an average of between 10 and 15 people who get shot or stabbed every night. Every night at Stroger Hospital in Chicago, 10 to 15 people. Now, Addie Lewis, who has seen the benefits of blood donation firsthand, she stands in her 18-year-old grandson's hospital room. Addie Lewis's 18-year-old grandson was shot in the neck. Addie says, everybody has been so good. He's had about 8 or 10 blood transfusions. This young man shot in the neck there in Chicago. Her family and others urge the public to give blood and to help save more lives. And I can appreciate that, Addie. We appreciate you urging the public to give blood. But we would like to urge the government of Chicago, the state of Illinois, and the United States of America to punish criminals and put the fear of God into their hearts to save lives in Chicago. Donating blood should be our second line of defense, for crying out loud. Unbelievable. That's Chicago. It's like erupted into an orgy of violence this summer. School's out and the kids are just slaughtering each other. Scary stuff. Dateline Worcester, Massachusetts. A 7-year-old boy who came to Massachusetts to spend the summer with his father, who severely beat him on Father's Day, has died. Nathaniel Turner was beaten by his father relative said Nathaniel lived with his grandmother in Alabama before coming to live with his 36-year-old father, Leslie Shuler. Shuler recently received custody of the child over the summer. According to police, the boy had been physically and mentally abused by his father for around 8 weeks. On Father's Day, young Nathaniel Turner suffered severe injuries when Father Schumer slammed the boy's head into a bedroom wall with such force that it left a dent in the wall. The boy was just pronounced dead today. He lingered all week at the hospital. A father beat his son to death on Father's Day. Dateline Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, from the Domestic Tranquility File. John Malarkey, now 20 years old, is charged with criminal homicide in the August 15th, 07 death of Demi Kuchia, the younger sister of his on-again, off-again girlfriend. Malarkey stabbed Kuchia 16 times with a folding knife and then slashed a 10-inch gash across his own throat. His defense attorney contends the defendant started taking Accutane about 4 months before the crime. Accutane is prescribed as an acne drug of last resort because the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has linked it to episodes of suicide and depression. And if Accutane doesn't work, he'll probably, you know, in his appeal, he'll claim it was a demon. Dateline Washington, D.C. from CBS. Chastity Turner was sitting on her grandmother's porch washing her dog when someone opened fire from a van on the south side of Chicago. Chastity was shot in the back of the neck and later died at the hospital. Three other people, including her father, were wounded. Police believe the shooting may be gang-related. And maybe it was gang-related, but it was more related to the fact that the government, the governing officials charged with preserving domestic tranquility, have failed to put the fear of God into the criminal's heart. The criminal, who is not necessarily the world's greatest problem solver, may resort to violence, unless he fears swift, brutal, painful punishment. And the fact that our governments universally across the Western world have failed in their responsibility to do that should have the citizenry literally up in arms. Dateline Columbus, Ohio, from the Associated Press. Police have charged 50-year-old Robert Knight with murder in the death of 44-year-old Tracy Moore, who lived with him in an apartment. An Ohio coroner says the head and arms of the woman were found in the man's freezer, and other body parts were found all around the apartment complex. The coroner is hoping to perform an autopsy once he has enough of the remains of the woman. Dateline Pico Rivera, California. A gunman fired into a group of people outside a pizzeria where a motorcycle club was holding a fundraising event. He killed three people and wounded seven. So 10 people shot in Pico Rivera at a pizza joint. Police at last report were still seeking the killer. They call him a gunman here in the AP story. I call him a killer. Dateline, Hanover, Massachusetts. A six-year-old Massachusetts girl riding her bicycle was kidnapped by a neighbor who tried then to assault her. But she managed to escape from his apartment despite being in leg shackles. The girl's mother reported her missing at about 1:30 in the afternoon, about a half hour after she had left her home to ride her bike. Unbelievable. Thank heavens the girl's escaped. The girl escaped and they caught the guy. And we can only hope. Well, we can only hope he gets what he deserves, but he won't. From the culture file now, let's move into the culture file. What is billed as being the first ever atheist film festival was held in San Francisco this past Sunday. The event was held in San Francisco's Mission District, which, by the way, for those of you who may not be history buffs, the Mission District of San Francisco is where the monks who came with the gospel of Jesus Christ built a mission that turned into the city of San Francisco. That mission district is now being defiled by heathens, atheists, homosexuals, freaks, creeps, weirdos, garden variety sodomites, celebrating their utter rebellion against everything that the missionaries stood for and against the gospel of Jesus Christ. They did that this past Sunday in two rooms at the Roxy Theater there in the Mission District of San Francisco. Among the features were a film called Root of All Evil, which famed a film in which famed British atheist Richard Dawkins issues a warning about how faith is, quote, gaining ground in the face of rational, scientific truth, unquote. Events were sponsored by the San Francisco Atheists. That's an organization, apparently. And they say that they, quote, do not believe in gods, devils, angels, ghosts, or other imaginary creatures. Okay. We're just going to make a note of that. The San Francisco Atheists don't believe in gods or devils or angels or ghosts or other imaginary creatures. Just making a note for Judgment Day. We'll catch up on it then. According to their website there at the San Francisco Atheists, they say they want to live, quote, a natural religion-free life, respecting science and learning, knowing that only human thought and effort and courage will bring individual freedom and cultural progress. It sounds eerily reminiscent of some of their forerunners. Stalin, Mao, human thought, effort, courage, Kim Jong-il, who's alive today, cultural progress. Interesting. You know, the atheistic worldview, it bore a lot of fruit in the 20th century. 30 million, 50 million, I forget how many were slaughtered at the hands of atheistic regimes who lived under the banner of being religion-free, worshiping human thought, human effort, human courage, and individual freedom without God. It's all been documented. And we need to throw these guys from the Mission District into the sea, in my humble opinion. Isn't it interesting that the atheists have a festival and the entire focus of the festival is apparently on religion? Anyway, atheism becomes a religion for some. And it's a religion that they'll cling to even in the face of the living God. Every knee shall bow, but the atheists will do it with clenched teeth. And they'll admit he's God. And they'll say, I don't want to be with you, God. And he'll say, fine, go to hell. All right, now from the culture file, we're running out of time now. So now I've got to figure out what do I want to do from the culture file. Jesse Levy, according to CNN, is a Republican activist who says he believes in family values, small government, and his lesbian mother's right to marry. Levy is part of the so-called Gaby Boom generation. That's gay, G-A-Y, Gaby Boom generation. He's a 29-year-old management consultant, and he's the son of a lesbian couple who chose to have a child, obviously, through artificial insemination. Critics of same-sex marriage say people such as 29-year-old management consultant Levy will grow up shamed and sexually confused. I say let's visit with this guy in 10 years and see where he is. Better yet, let's see where his parents are in 10 years. He's still relatively young. Oh, one final from the politics file. Before we run out of time, from the Reuters Wire, this is hot off the presses. Two U.S. Democratic lawmakers want Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to relax recently tightened standards for mortgages on new condominiums, saying they could threaten the viability of some developments and slow the housing market recovery. In a letter to the CEOs of both Fannie and Freddie, Representatives Barney Frank, chairman of the House Financial Services Committee, and Anthony Weiner warned that certain thresholds recently tightened by Fannie and Freddie may be too onerous. The legislators asked the companies to make appropriate adjustments to their underwriting standards. Man, it's like deja vu all over again. What's the deal with Barney Frank and Fannie Mae? He just can't keep his hands off something with Fannie in the title or something like that. The guy's just, doesn't he remember that it was his oversight of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac that led to the housing crisis that has led to the current depression? Does he not realize that? It's just scary that Barney Frank is allowed to even write letters to Fannie and Freddie anymore, for crying out loud. Both Fannie and Freddie are preparing a response to the lawmakers, and man, that's scary stuff, folks. Barney Frank has just about destroyed the entire economy with his lackadaisical oversight, and now he's being allowed to communicate. Anyway, we got to keep him away from Fannie's. This is the Weekly Worldview. I'm Doug McBurney. Let me, before we go, I went a little long. I'm sorry. We want to thank our friends at American Right to Life, KGov Radio, Denver Bible Church, our good friends at Personhood USA, who have some big news breaking, I'll hear over the next few weeks, Theology Online, and all the great folks over there, and as usual, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. I want to say goodbye to you. It is the end of the show. The sun is on its way down. And until next week, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.